I'd like to welcome you to the latest Talk in the Peasant series of the Socialist Party of Great Britain. We have Comrade Keith Scully from Manchester branch here talking about British Trotskyism, the Sons of a Prophet. So hope it's an interesting talk.
Well, I did this talk in Manchester and it was, there was some people there and they didn't seem to dislike it that much. So here goes. First of all, I'd just like to say that what I'll be doing is I'll be handing out some bits of pieces from the archives upstairs, because I do the archives. And I got some bits and pieces that go with the talk. And you can kind of, what I'll do is I'll kind of pass them around that way and they can go kind of up there and then kind of come back again. Okay, I shall start. Trotskyism is a species of Leninism that derives from the works of Lenin and the practical experience of the Russian Revolution. As such, it is closely related to the orthodox communism of the mainstream communist parties. Early British Trotskyist groups saw themselves as alternatives to the Communist Party. Trotskyist policies, defence of the Russian Revolution, anti-imperialism, immediate demands, critical support for the Labour Party, industrial militancy, internal structure, democratic centralism, and the international organisation, that is the various fourth internationals, mirror those of the CP. Even the attitude of the movement to its leader, Leon Trotsky, closely resembles the adulation once awarded to his rival Stalin. Trotsky's emphasis is on spreading the lessons of Russia abroad rather than the socialism in one country approach, which is what the CP was. There were several minor Trotskyist and semi-Trotskyist groups and individuals in Britain before 1932, but these were short-lived and did not gain international recognition from the US, which was the fountainhead of Trotskyism at the time. The first British Trotskyist organisation was the Balham Group. Yeah, there's a little book about them. Here it is. And it was called...
Speak up a little bit louder.
You wouldn't like to come down here, would you? Because I don't like raising my voice too much, because it gives me earache.
Oh, right.
You can come a little closer. No, okay. I've lost my place now, no. Anyway, the Balham Group was essentially a small group of South London militants who came under the influence of The Militant, US magazine, from early 1931. Unfortunately, I haven't got a copy of The Militant, because it is very rare. The name is a totem to British Trotskyists, and at last count, there are about a dozen different militants throughout the ages, including the very famous one, which I'm sure we've all bought a copy of in the past. Essentially, the dissidents were opposed to the CP's class-against-class policy, which meant opposition to the Labour Party, and in favour of working ordinary unions rather than setting up separate communist unions, which was what the Communist Party did at the time. Pretty weird, actually, because they never did that again. In May 1932, the Balham Group began to put out a magazine, and this was called The Communist. It wasn't called The Militant. Odd. They were soon routed out of the Communist Party and expelled in August that year. May 1932, incidentally, that's this month, 80 years ago. That's why it's 80 years. So they were expelled, but they continued to meet as the Balham Group. There's the Balham Group. The Balham Group of the CPGB, despite the fact that they weren't actually in the CPGB anymore, until August the following year, when they became the Communist League. They met, incidentally, I don't know if anyone's from around here, but Bedford Road is kind of like down that way, and it's kind of runs parallel to Clapham High Street, and that's where they used to meet. And in fact, that was a big meeting place for the early Trotskyists. It was called Morris Hall, and it was actually an ILP place. And as I will shortly explain, the ILP was infiltrated by the Trotskyists at the time. The Balham Group is significant. There it is again. Hold that one up. Significant, as virtually all the Trotskyist groups are descended from them. From our point of view, Trotskyist revolt of 1932 is interesting because a generation before, another group of dissidents, tired of the opportunism and inconstancy of the main left group of its day, itself an direct ancestor of the Communist Party, left or were expelled to form a small group called the Socialist Party of Great Britain. That's us, that is. The fates of the two were pretty different. Within a few years, the SPGB evolved away from the theory and practice of its parent, which is the SDF, or Social Democratic Federation. We are completely unlike them. It's a very different organisation. It was a very different organisation. The Trotskyists, on the other hand, continued the ways of the CPGB of the 20s and added a few foibles of their own. These oddities included a tendency towards splits, which was demonstrated early on. 1934, the Communist Leaguers joined the Labour Party. And they worked in the Socialist League. This was a popular soft left group of the day. And they became called the Marxist League. So you had a Marxist League working in the Socialist League. A minority disagreed with this policy and went off to join the Independent Labour Party. That's not here anymore. Well, it is. It's called the Publications. And that's because they wanted to go back into the Labour Party when they found out it was cold out there. Anyway, the ones who joined the ILP became known as the Marxist Group. And this was rather famous because their main man was a fellow called C.L.R. James. And he was a West Indian-born cricket correspondent for The Guardian. And he was a very talented writer of history. And I quite enjoy his books, actually. They're quite good.
And cricket.
What?
And cricket.
And cricket. I didn't know he wrote books about
Beyond
it.
Beyond Boundaries.
Anyway, the ILP group itself split to form what was known as the Militant Group. It eventually became known as the Militant Group, and this entered the Labour League of Youth. Reasons for these splits were quite typical too. Essentially, it was about which groups to infiltrate, and this is a tactic known as entryism, or entrism, if you like to actually pronounce it as it's written. I'm not sure if it's entryism or entrism, so there you go. It's not in my dictionary either way. This was no novelty, as CPers were doing this in the 20s. And discreetly as the Cryptos, they continued to do it until the Communist Party was dissolved in 1991. British Trotskyists, however, made this tactic their own, although until the Militant of the 80s, it was unsuccessful. By the time of the outbreak of the Spanish Civil War, there were three Trotskyist groups, each boring in its own tunnel. The fate of the infiltrators was to set a pattern. A soft-left Socialist League was shut down by the Labour Party, who had never liked parties within parties, unless they're authorised ones, of course. The ILP expelled its own infiltrators, and the youth group was blocked by the communist interests, led by Ted Willis. He was the writer of Dixon of Dot Green, incidentally, which is quite a nice thing. I quite like Dixon of Dot Green. They should have it back on the TV. On the initiative of the Fourth International, the Trotskyist equivalent of the Third International, the remnants combined to form a group called the Revolutionary Socialist League in 1938. This formed its own front in the Labour Party, known as the Militant League, and you would have that one eventually. By this time, another group had emerged, the Workers' International League. This was actually probably the most important one, but at the time it seemed like basically a faction fight. It was formed in late 1937, and it was really personal disagreements between people in the Militant Group. And it was based in Paddington, and it was led by a guy called Jock Huston, and it included Ted Grant and Jerry Healy, who went on to become two very important figures in the Trotskyist movement. Like the others, it was entryist, but it was rather more pragmatic in its approach. And that might seem a bit weird to concentrate on all these things of the 30s, but I think what happens is with organisations, you decide what you're going to be like very early on. Within a few years of actually forming your group, you decide what you're going to do and how you're going to approach things. And those sort of attitudes have been not set in stone, but they become a tradition. And I think it's important to see that from the 30s onwards, they're pretty much doing exactly the same thing. Right, so in the outbreak of the Second World War, there were two Trotskyist groups in Britain. There were actually a few other little bits. And as I go along, I think I should say this now, that there were actually tiny little bits here and there and goodness knows what. And I'm kind of disregarding those a little bit, which is unfortunate because we've got some lovely bits of archive of them and nothing of these sort of main ones. Anyway, there were two main Trotskyist groups. There was the officially recognised ones, the Revolutionary Socialist League, and they were known as the Millies, after their newspaper, the Militant. And they had 140 members, and the Workers' International League were the other guys, and they were called the Winnies, and their paper was called the Workers' International News, and there was about 40 of them. So you can see that's the sort of size we're talking about. I mean, 140 is probably a bit of an exaggeration because that was throughout the country and probably some of them were paper members and had never been seen again. Probably 40, 50. And what we're talking about here is in socialist party terms, we had branches that were 40 or 50 strong in those days. It was a smaller group which flourished, however. The Millies group, Millies Front in the Labour Party, was banned. Yeah, this is coming up a lot, isn't it? This was banned in 1940. And given the wartime truce, the wartime political truce, times were not good for entryism in any case, because, you know, you didn't kind of buck the coalition. The group had also decided to go undercover on the outbreak of war. So these added up to a rapid and terminal decline into faction forming on the part of the Revolutionary Socialist League. The Whinnies, on the other hand, went from strength to strength, wisely dropped entryism, turning instead to recruiting disaffected CP militants, especially trade union activists. Because after June 1941, the Communist Party had an industrial truce. They were all for war production at any cost. Right, in early 1944, the Workers' International League absorbed the remnants of the Revolutionary Socialist League to form the Revolutionary Communist Party. Now, I have some bits and pieces of them. This is the Workers' International News. This is the theoretical organ, the Revolutionary Communist Party. And this has a lovely picture of Leon Trotsky on there, who actually, he actually looks a bit like me there when I had my hair. I had hair like that at one time. It was kind of long, but that was quite nice. And it did, anyway, there you go. And this is the Socialist Appeal. This is their paper. And anyway, I'll pass that around. That's my first item. And if you'd like to have a look at that, I'm going to pass it around that way. Anyway, the Revolutionary Communist League, this was an iconic name, and it was used more than once in the history of Trotskyism. There's been several revolutionary communist parties, in other words. From 1944 to 1949, it was the only, basically the only Trotskyist group in Britain. And up until the 1960s, mid-60s, it was the only one to be relatively successful, reaching a maximum membership of 472, which is about half of what we had in those days. The headquarters of the Revolutionary Communist Party, incidentally, was in Harrow Road, and it was very close to where this party organised its 1945 general election campaign, which was the first election we ever fought. First general election we ever fought, parliamentary election we ever fought. But the growth of the Workers' International League was due to special circumstances of the war. And within a few years of peace, the Revolutionary Communist Party was reduced to a scrabbling ruin. Ideologically, the unprecedented nationalisation campaign programme of the Labour Party cut the ground from underneath the feet of the left. And on the industrial front, the return of the CP to militancy cut off another potential source of recruits. In mid-1949, the Revolutionary Communist Party was wound up, and its members joined the Labour Party as individuals. Of course, there's other reasons for it, but I'm putting it down to that rather than blaming it on personalities, which is quite common in Trotsky's history. Anyway, in the 1950s, moving on to the 1950s, beginning of 1950, there was no organised Trotskyist group in this country. The most coherent was called the Club, or the Group, and it was all operating clandestinely in the Labour Party. And it was led by a guy called Gerry Healy, an Irish guy he was. Anyway, this was largely worked through a broad left front group called the Socialist Fellowship, and its de facto journal, which is called Socialist Outlook. And I shall pass this one around. This is an edition from September 1949, so this is actually just after the Revolutionary Communist Party had been wound up. Healy group was expelled from the Labour Party in 1959, at the end of the 50s, and became the Socialist Labour League, and that had about 400 members, so it was doing pretty well. And it was actually the leading Trotskyist group in Britain up until perhaps 1975. Anyway, they were the mainline Trotskyist organisation. At the end of the year, that year, 1950, Ted Grant and a number of other personalities from the old RCP were expelled from the club, or they left. These formed the International Socialist Group. I have a copy of their journal here. This is called the International Socialist. This is quite rare, actually. There's not a lot of these about. And because they were probably the smallest one. They were very small, and they didn't have any, what would I say? They didn't have any particular reason to exist separately from the club. I mean, they obviously don't. Of course, they had some reason to do it. But all things considered, they were basically the same thing. They were working in the Labour Party. And anyway, there's an international socialist. I should pass it over, and you can kind of can go around that way. The most interesting group from our point of view was also came about in 1950. This was the Socialist Review Group, the State Caps, or State Capitalists, of Tony Cliff. Again, this was a split from the club. And it was the smallest, but it was also very active because it had a particular ideology to put forward, which was that Russia was state capitalist. This is, in fact, a certain... It's similar to what we say, but they say it in a slightly different way. Anyway, look, this is the journal. This is the Socialist Review. This is a copy from 1952, which is, and that's going the same way. Anyhow, the point of state capitalism is that Russia is no different from any other country. It is capitalist. Or was capitalist. It doesn't exist anymore. Soviet Union doesn't exist. What was really evident during the 1950s was the emergence of personal leadership in Trotskyism. This, of course, had been true in the Communist Party, but not even Harry Pollitt, who was probably the most charismatic of the Communist Party leaders, was in any way comparable with the position acquired by Healy, Grant and Cliff in their respective groups. Right, turning now to the 1960s. This was really when... incidentally, I have another one here. This is a... just to demonstrate that there are other groups besides the one I'm talking about. This is called Socialist Current. This was a very small group, but quite interesting because basically what they did, they broke away from the Grant people and they dissolved themselves into the Labour Party, pretty much. And that's their thing, it's called Socialist Current. And this went on apparently till 1988, but I've never seen any later copies. Right, the 1960s. Before the mid-60s, no Trotskyist group exceeded the size of the SPGB. That they begin to grow at this time has a close relationship with the deterioration of the Communist Party, whose internal coherency was undermined by the growth of Euro-communism. That is a critical attitude to the Soviet Union. After all, I mean, if you take away the Soviet Union from the Communist Party, they didn't have any reason to exist whatsoever. And people went elsewhere. And this was something that developed gradually in the Communist Party. It was also due, in large part, to a turn to the youth. They liked the youth. We don't like the youth. We hate youth people. We only like old people. I've got three journals. They all did exactly the same thing in the early 60s. They went into youth. These are the Healyites. The Healyites, the Healy group, worked inside. They had a paper called Keep Left, the paper for socialist youth. And it had a large number of young socialist branches, which they were in favour of or had influence within. That's that one. I also have, for you all, the Cliffites. Cliff group, they were working in these. They had their own one called Rebel. It's a nice one, again, called Rebel. And there's another one called Young Guard. This is my favourite, in fact, because it's got red letters, and I think that's quite striking, red. Anyway, and these were Cliff and Grant people were doing that one. Anyway, there you go. And I should pass those on to you. Not got very far yet. You haven't seen any of them things. I hope it'll get round before I'm finished. I'm almost finished now. We can have our tea set up shortly. Anyway, they all got slung out, except for the Grant people. The Grant people did not get slung out. And they were possibly they were too small, but they also came up with a clever wheeze. And that was they dissolved themselves. They dissolved themselves pretty much. They went all secret. And they set up this thing. This is militant. This is the thing that I remember. I bought copies of this. This in the 80s. This is an early one. This is from 1968. And, even in the 60s, pretty much, they didn't really get going for quite a time. But I should pass that one around. That's an early militant. At the start of the decade, breaking away from the Healyites was a group that we quite like, or I presume we quite like, because we have a full set of these upstairs. This one is called Agitator for Workers' Power, but later it became something called Solidarity. These were basically libertarian communists who broke away, the left communists, of a similar sort of... they were similar to us. They're something in the same sort of genre. And it's very interesting because, so far as I know, they're the only group that's ever broken away from Trotskyism to do this. Anyway, this is Agitator for Workers' Power. It was a predecessor, or changed its name shortly thereafter, to Solidarity, which went on till the 80s. There were a number of other groups in the 60s, including the International Marxist Group. These were at one time very popular. These reached probably about 1,000, or so it's said, in the late 60s. They were quite big, and they came from nothing, and they went basically to nothing as well. They're still around, but they're... what would you call them? They're pretty secretive. They wouldn't talk to me anyway. There you go. I wouldn't either. They started off as the International Group in Nottingham. And this is them. They had a rather nice thing called The Week. This is from, I think it's the early 60s, 1964. And it's in green. It's got a rather nice big W there and a big K there. That was when they were interested in the Labour Party. But they went out, and they became quite big. Joined with some other ones, of course. Changed a bit, and they were popular amongst students. And they had something called the Black Dwarf. And that was a pretty groovy sort of paper for the times. This was 68, man. Anyway, I should pass them around. Hurry up. They're all piling up there. Especially because the next one's one I've got to pass around as well. This is because most of the things I've got in the archives are from the 40s, 50s and 60s. We don't have a lot from about 1975 onwards, and we don't have very much before, or maybe about 1945. There's a few odd bits and pieces, but they're not really representative of the, particularly the Trotskyists anyway. Oh, I should say, incidentally, this is the... Oh, I've got another one I completely failed to pass around here. This is another thing from the 60s. These are the Healyite people. There's a Labour Review. That's their theoretical journal of the Healy group. So this was probably the main... What would you call the mainstream in the 60s? And on the back, it's got an advert for something by Leon Trotsky again. He's actually looking very much like me there because his eyes are slightly off-kilter. It's going like this. Arr. Anyway, and the Healyites at that time were working from 186 Clapham High Street, which is just down the road. Clapham's always been a big place for Trotskyists. I don't know if anyone here is old enough to have been to their... in fact, you wouldn't have to be that old because they were still... I think they vacated it in the late 80s. But anyway... they had a flat down there where Healy held sessions with his nice young ladies. And this is the newsletter. This is the paper of the Socialist Labour League, the Healyite group of the day. It's called The Newsletter. And there's one of my things from the current contemporary thing, a real live thing from today, is actually incredibly similar to this. And if you were to buy a copy of this today, it's called something very like Newsletter. It's called... Newsline. That's right. It's called Newsline, and it is a daily paper. And it's incredible because I actually bought a copy of this. It's 40 pence. 40 pence! You can't get anything for 40 pence these days. Anyway, that's that one there. And I also have a thing from the Cliffite group, the Cliff group of the day. This is a rather rare number one of international socialism. This is a current publication still going. This is number one from 1960, and this is still going. Somewhere, someone might rip that off. And this is the state capitalist or state capitalist Cliffite group of the 60s. This is called the International Socialism Group, or International Socialist, as it became later. And this is Labour Worker, and it's the predecessor of Socialist Worker. I shall pass them around too. Anyway. This is going to be very short because, look, I'm going to bypass him. You can have something over there. There you are. You don't get them bits. This is one of my favourites. It looks still in the 60s. This is the Revolutionary Workers' Party, Trotskyist. It's a Posadist group. very unusual people. And this is a English version or English wing, the British wing of a South American based group. These were the UFO Trotskyists, or so-called UFO Trotskyists. It's very cruel. If you look them up on the internet, it will tell you all about how this bloke, Posadas, how he thought that UFOs essentially were proof of communism, because they would be communists, because they're a superior civilization, so they've got to be communists, and they exist, and they're little green red men. There you go, there's the Posadas thing. So, a fairly nice little thing that is. It's very well produced, which is, in fact, interesting, because a lot of the very small groups actually did produce very nice things. They were, like, very nicely designed, very aesthetically pleasing publications. Anyway, that's the 60s done. The 1970s. Right, the decline of the CPGB really got into gear after its condemnation of the Czechoslovak invasion in 1968. After all, what was the point of the Soviet fan club if it didn't actually support the Soviet Union? New radicals went elsewhere, mostly swelling the size and number of Trotskyist groups. And if you look on your piece of paper, which there are lots of pieces of paper around, you'll see that that's when they really started to diverge in the 1970s. You've got lots of different groups coming off there. And some of them, there's all different reasons for them. There are, as I said, entryism is one of them, which group to go into, whether to come out or not. There's also personalities. But I tend to disregard personalities. And there's also, is such and such a war good or bad? That's the sort of thing you might split on. And key dates in the 1970s. 1974, the Workers' Revolutionary Party formed. Here's some nice things in red. This was really the sort of peak, I think, of the Workers' Revolutionary Party when it was actually formed. Afterwards, it became pretty much a sort of, I hate to use the word sect, but it became very self-regarding and very obsessed with itself, I think. Anyway, there it is. There's some stuff from the Workers' Revolutionary Party. Vote, Workers' Revolutionary Party. And that's a transitional programme. And the Workers' Revolutionary Party. Transitional programme, presumably meaning reforms. It's one of our bête noires. That's not the right word, is it? Whatever it is. Anyway, this is a early socialist worker. This is the current thing that's still going. This is from 1971. So I suppose it's not changed very much. This one actually says for workers' control and international socialism, which is, I remember it. Neither Washington nor Moscow. International socialism. That's what it had on it for a long time. And I thought it would have it on there because in this one here, this is a socialist review from 1962, it has the slogan on it. So obviously, it must have been revived at a later date. Neither Washington nor Moscow. International socialism. Anyway, there's a socialist worker. In the 1980s, British Trotskyism experienced two explosions. The first was that of the Militant, which went from an also-ran to number one. Its peak, which was about towards the end of the 80s, it had 8,000 supporters. Because it didn't have members, it had supporters. It had 250 full-time workers. I don't think we've ever had one full-time worker in this party. 50 or more councillors and 3 MPs, which was more than the CP ever had at its peak in the 1940s. It only ever managed 2. It also had 2 in the 1920s, but not sure if they were at the same time. Anyway, Grant and Co. presumably could not believe their luck, because this is the only time in the whole of British Trotskyist history, that entryism had ever come to this. And you think, bloody hell, what's happening here? Anyway, I'll soon be done. The second explosion was the Workers' Revolutionary Party, the WRP. This was more of an implosion. The Healy Group had basically stalled in the late 70s, and after revelations about the sexual and financial misconduct of Gerry Healy, the Workers' Revolutionary Party split into 8 or more warring factions. There might have been more, there might have been less. Depends on who you read. There was a lot of them anyway, and there still is a lot of them still going about. Do I have anything from those days? No, I don't. It's my opinion that the late 80s, early 90s were the heyday of British Trotskyism. There was, the Militant was big, the SWP, they were done big and still growing. They hadn't sort of really got into the, I don't know what you call it, the stuck in the student phase, which is kind of pretty much what they are at the moment. There's a lot of students and that's their mainstay. They still had some variety. Not that I dislike students, the students are very nice. But what was really striking was the number of a variety of groups. So striking, always, incidentally, I forgot to mention when I was doing that militant, that there's a couple of books about it. In fact, this guy, Michael Crick, seems to have had a little, seems to have made a bit of a career out of it because he's had two of them, his Militant and The March of Militant, which was very nice for him. And he must be a bit pissed now that they've gone. So what was really striking was the number of groups in the late 80s, early 90s. This is the time when I sort of was first coming into politics. And I was sort of like shocked by all these bloody socialist this and socialist that, socialist the other. And I really didn't know which way to turn. And of course, this is when John Sullivan wrote his book called As Soon As This Pub Closes, which is it's very funny. And you can get a lot of got a lot of laughs out of it. And amongst the Trotskyist groups of the day, or Trotskyist descended groups, I should say, were two of the weirdest ones which the British left has ever seen. Red Action. Red Action had been formed in 1981. This is the one you mentioned, wasn't it, Red Action? Apparently they believed in squadism, which apparently means beating up Nazis. And we haven't got any of their publications in the attic, probably because they were printed on bricks and bottles, so you could throw them at people. They still exist, incidentally, but it's rather difficult to do the physical when you're in your dotage. And they must be. They're probably, like me, a bit podgy and a bit bald. And, you know, it's a bit difficult to get it on with guys when you're getting that, when you're getting a bit old. The second oddity, and this is an oddity, this is, I think this has got to be my least favourite group of all time. My missus actually detests them heartily. I had some rather nice things from them myself, but she threw them away because she hated them so much. I think she tore them up one day. Anyway, this was the Revolutionary Communist Party, the Mark II version of it, or perhaps Mark III or IV. During the 80s, this had been your bog standard Trotskyist set. No great shakes. This is one of their publications when they were a proper Trotskyist group. It's called The Next Step, and it's the review of the work of the Revolutionary Communist Party. When Britain goes to war, the Malvinas Argentinas defend the rights of 27 million Argentines, all of whom live on the Falklands. Anyway, there you go. And what was odd about those is that all of a sudden they became weird little suited blokes. And this was, I couldn't believe this when I actually sort of met them. Because, like, you're supposed to be scruffy. Lefties are scruffy bastards. You don't wear a suit.
Well, they wear boots, though. Used to wear boots, didn't they?
Did they? I can't remember what boots. I just remember suits. Anyway, and they were selling this appalling magazine called Living Marxism. I kept some Living Marxism, but like I said, my missus found it and tore it into tiny shreds. Everyone on the left apparently hated them, and it's not just me. And they were pretty much expelled from the left, let alone the Trotskyist movement. And this is the only time I've actually seen anything like left unity. Basically, bloody hell, let's get rid of these blokes. And they still exist. They still exist. And they're a rather scabrous organisation, I should say. Not even organisation. They're basically an anti-green group. They make gestures against things like recycling. And they're telling us that how there is no global warming. Even in fact, it's bloody hot today. So, you know, I don't know about global warming, but it's certainly global warming here. Anyway, you've heard your crescendo. Now, this is the diminuendo, or the decline. Not so much decline, as nothing happens in the last 20 years. Of course, there are certain things that have happened. One of them, of course, is the end of Militant. Militant got expelled, finally from the Labour Party. They lost in 30 years, and they'd done better than anyone else had ever done as an interest group. And this is the last Militant. Last Militant from 1997. I didn't buy this. It was Comrade Adam. And the very next day, the very next week, in fact, it became The Socialist. And this is number one of The Socialist. And, you know, it's a... They tried to keep the continuity going, but really, it hasn't got the same continuity there, I don't think. It's something different. We don't like the Socialist Party. The other group, the SPEW, as they're called, we don't like them. Because then they copied us. Anyway, so that's what they did. And the right, so Trotskyism is essentially a certain viewpoint about the nature of the Soviet Union. That's what I think Trotskyism is. It's about the Soviet Union. It's about what the Soviet Union is, and now it isn't the Soviet Union's history. And because it had got the it's the mind ripped away the reason for the existence of Trotskyism, really. And so far from inheriting the mantle of the old Communist Party, the last 20 years have seen every sort of Leninist group basically sliding down the pan. I mean, the only one that's really kept up is the Socialist Workers' Party, and it's the most heretical of the Trotskyist groups, and I think it's the one who's it's been easiest for them to disassociate themselves with the historical legacy of the Soviet Union, because people are not interested in the Soviet Union anymore. Young people are not interested in hearing about the Russian Revolution, and it was pretty boring in the 90s when I was at university to talk about. Just as the wall was coming down and the Soviet Union was breaking up, I was attending meetings about the Russian Revolution and the lessons of October, which is the lessons of October were, you know, a long time ago. Anyway, you can disagree with that, which I hope you will. Other Trotskyist groups have undergone a de-trotification programme. If you look on your little sheet, you will see that some of them vanish. They vanish kind of there in the 90s. There's one or two. And what basically they're doing, they're becoming non-Trotskyist organisations. They're still there, but they're of a green or pinkish hue. They are, and some of them have become uncritical admirers of the various radical regimes around the world. Some of them still communist, still call themselves communist, which is, of course, uncritical. Is like, it's not really to be done in Trotskyist circles. You're not supposed to be uncritical, you're supposed to be critical of them. Anyway, and the last 10 years, of course, probably this is the main development, I think, is the Electoral Pact. And the latest one, of course, is Tusk, Trade Union Socialist Coalition. Coalition, is it coalition? Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, this is basically the last of a long line, or rather, it's the last so far of a long line, and all of them have been very unsuccessful. They're not really got it, and I'm not quite sure why, because I think there is a place for a left group in Britain, but perhaps not as a Trotskyist one. Anyway, and that's it really. But I have here, which I will also put, I'm going to put throw these around as a sort of a passing gesture. These are, so far as I can see, these are the current Trotskyist organisations, or semi-Trotskyist organisations. I shall start with the Socialist Worker. This is the biggest one. Socialist Worker, this is a current edition, or not current, but it's a fairly recent edition of a Socialist Worker. We also have the two main successors of Militant, which are the Socialist, which you saw number one of just now, and Socialist Appeal. The Socialist Appeal was the people who wanted to stay in the Labour Party. This was Ted Grant and his successors. And that's Socialist Appeal, and there's the Socialist. That's similar organisations. This one is a not really. This is the Revolutionary Communist Group. They are basically an anti-SWP outfit. They're not weird. They're Leninists, but not Trotskyists, I think. So they're semi ones. That's on this sheet here with the little kitty on it. They're a semi Trotskyist or an ex Trotskyist group. This is another. Let's see now. This is this is the Newsline. This is the, oh, it's 50 pence. The Newsline is. This is the daily paper. The Trotskyist daily paper. I think it's incredible. Someone somewhere might buy this. It's difficult. It must be difficult enough running the Daily Worker. That's not called the Daily Worker. It's called the Morning Star. It must be difficult enough running the Morning Star. But Trotskyism is... That's very weird. Very weird, that one. And we have Workers' Power. This is another type. The difference with these guys is they're not into a Fourth International they're into a fifth one. They want a fifth international. Somewhere, apparently, there's a sixth international. Oh, dear. This is Solidarity and Workers' Liberty. This is Alliance for Workers' Liberty, the AWL. This is, to my mind, this is your bog standard Trotskyist group. It's your, bloody hell, that group. I can't be bothered with them. These are a fairly odd bunch. This is Workers Fight, another, I think they're an ex-WRP people, perhaps. I'm not sure, actually, because I haven't written it on there. There's Workers Hammer. This is the Spartacists. The Militant. This is the American version. This is the militant that's still going. This is actually an American one, but it's sold by a British organisation. I bought it from a British guy who was called the Communist League. He was a guy in there, and I met him in Manchester. And they actually have in Manchester, the Communist League who sells this, they have a shop. They have a little shop in the centre of Manchester, and there's. I can't believe there's more than one of them in Manchester. Anyway, this is my personal favourite. This is Socialist Voice, the International Workers League. Put this up. This is an organisation based in Liverpool. Basically, it's another WRP successor group. And their fellow is this guy called Bill Hunter, who was an industrial militant in Liverpool in the docks in the 50s, I think. Anyway, he is very old and very sick, apparently. But they were very nice to me. They wanted to come around to my house. I was slightly alarmed about that.
For what purpose?
They wanted to chat me up. And I didn't like to say no because the lady was called Charlotte. And I usually like people called Charlotte. They're quite nice. I said, yes, you're welcome. But make sure my lady's out at that time. This is one I picked up yesterday. This is Socialist Fight. Socialist Fight is not on my list. And the reason why is, even though I knew of them before, I don't know anything about Socialist Fight. The only thing I know about them is that it's a very weird publication. And that's my last contribution. Anyone who knows anything about Socialist Fight can write in. That's the write-in job. And again, that's my history of Trotskyism. Any questions?